your experience, changes with lived experience rather than imagination, imagined experience. My lived experience of this service, for example, the sermon comes a lot faster than when it does when you're sitting back there. I'll tell you that right now. Dell asked me at the beginning of June, she's a good planner, by the way, she's ahead of schedule on a lot of things, if I would preach. And I said, absolutely, that sounds awesome. And then the end of June came, and I can't recall while I said yes what I was thinking. But I am very, very excited to be with y'all. And, you know, I get to know some folks around here through relationship, through shared meals. You guys are great at inviting us over. We should return the favor, likely. But my wife and I, Nancy's back there, if Nancy can wave, so you know who I'm connected to. And my mom's actually right next to her. Hi, Mama. We came to RenCon with a little bit of trepidation and a little bit of, you know, uncertainty. And the reason for that is lived experience. We joined a church that ended up closing, and it was a painful experience. And so when we were invited to come, I was invited to come and do some of the stuff that you see on the screen. And that seemed like an okay thing to do because I could do that from the back and I could watch you, right? I didn't have to participate yet. And I think that is something that is very much needed when we're considering heavy things like, is this where I want to be a part of for my spiritual development? And as I watched, I found out that you all are just on this journey too, just like me, and that you have a desire to show up and to be loving, and that looks really good on you. And so we were very happy to ultimately join RenCon. Now, in coming forward and speaking, I haven't done that in a while in a faith community, and that's a different process altogether. A little bit about me: I was a missionary in South Africa, which is going to pertain to a little bit of what I talk about today. I'm going to share a story with you from that. And my experience was very much a lived experience of spirituality. I lived in ministry. I felt a calling to ministry. I felt like that always resonated really well for me. And I was part of a Pentecostal group here in Tucson, actually, and they sent me to South Africa at the age of 18 to teach seventh grade. If that sounds like a bad idea, it was. But lived experience, right? So I had that experience and also came back and had the experience of being publicly disfellowshipped when I came out. I am a part of the LGBT community. That might be confusing since I introduced you to my wife and you're looking at me and I'm a male. I'm transgender. That means that my physical being on paper is different than my lived experience. So I had a gender marker of female, still do, and I am married to a woman. So you imagine that my life changed quite a bit Friday. And also, my sermon changed quite a bit Friday. Because in lived experience, our lived experience, if we are wanting to develop a sense of faith in our lives, the lived experience changes our awareness of who God is and who we are to God and who we are to each other. And that's been my experience here in RenCon, and that's been my experience this weekend especially. So I'm going to share a few things with you today that might sound, at least on paper, at least in the first telling, exactly the same. The first thing is that I want to talk about that we are called to love. And then the second thing I want to talk about is that we are called to love those around us. And then the third thing, which sounds very much like the second thing, but it's not at all. Those around us are who we're called to love. It's actually a pretty different thing. So we are called to love. I can get behind that. I've been able to get behind that very easily since I was a very young child. God made sense to me that God would be in the world and that God is love. That made a lot of sense to me. Didn't take a lot of convincing for me. Never really has. I have a friend who describes her faith as a children's Bible thumper. And, you know, on first listen, I was like, oh, that sounds awesome. That's fantastic. Tell me more. And she talks about that she is a children's Bible thumper because the God in the children's Bible makes a lot of sense to her. The love that's experienced, that we share with kids, the God loves you and so do we mentality, she can get behind that. It makes a lot of sense to her. And when we talked a little bit about that more, on the surface, that might sound like she doesn't have a deep relationship with spirit or spiritual things, and that's not the reality at all. But that's her litmus test. Is it expansive? Is it all-encompassing and is it true regardless of who you are? That's her litmus test. And so it actually runs pretty deep in her faith development. And I really liked that concept when she said children's Bible thumper. I went and got a children's Bible and I was looking at it. And I just remembered the wonder. It's a sense of wonder that you, as are lovable enough that there's nothing else you can do to be more lovable. That's pretty incredible. And if you take that in and you believe that, wow, you could do a lot of things in this world because you feel like you belong in this world. You feel like you were meant to be here. It's pretty grounding. I'm meant to be in relationship. I'm meant to be here for this time. That's wonderful. But what I noticed happened for me, and I chose religion. I was not brought up in religion. I took myself to religion on Sundays after a couple of visits with an uncle and aunt who took me to church. I really liked it. So around the age of 13, I started going myself. But the children's Bible suddenly turned into Grimm's fairy tales. It got dark. It got dark. There started to be these stories about people that were allowed and people that weren't. People that were welcomed and people that weren't. And all of a sudden, it wasn't that I was lovable. I was actually not lovable, and I had to do all these things to become lovable again. And in encompassing that and bringing that into my faith development, there became insiders and outsiders. There became people that were welcome and people that weren't. And I really wanted to be welcomed. But I was one of those that weren't. No matter how hard I tried, the fact of who I was being a part of the LGBT community, just I couldn't shake it. It wasn't going away. And as a result, I heard the Grimm's fairy tale version more than I heard the children's Bible story. So that began to change my relationship to the divine. That began to change my relationship to my understanding of grace, my understanding of who that's allowed for, who that's given to. It started to change me. So that the concept of we are called to love didn't seem all-encompassing anymore. And that ended very much for me whenever I was told you need to actually go. You're not a part of this anymore. So coming back to the realization that we are called to love has been a slow process for me. But I can very fervently stand in front of you and say that I believe that. I believe that we are called to love and that that is what I am called to do when I am living in spirit. That if I follow a spiritual path, it'll actually make me more loving. And that will be something that you experience, not something that I tell you is loving and you're not experiencing it as loving. We are called to love those around us. As I come to church, one of the benefits that I have is imagined experience. So one of the things I get to do is I get to sit back there, and I sit back there so I can run the PowerPoint, but I'd probably sit back there anyway, just so I have, you know, room. But I can sit and I can hear what's being shared by whoever's sharing the words. And I can imagine myself doing something different. So we're talking about love. I can imagine myself loving in a different way. I can go in my brain to the phone call that I had with my father that didn't feel loving, and I can think about what I could do different next time, for example. I can imagine people that I've never met before in loving them. It's an imagined experience. The work that I do in general is work around recovery. So my job is to tell people that I believe that they can recover. That's a pretty great job, by the way. One of the best ways to have that message be something that people feel and actually can have hope in is for them to imagine themselves different. So for example, and when I say recovery, I mean recovery from substance abuse, and I mean recovery from mental health issues. I mean recovery from trauma, all types of recovery. So for example, if I'm sitting with someone who never imagined that they could go to college, and they're getting ready to consider signing up for college, one of the exercises that's a great one to do is, what kind of backpack would you pick out? What color would it be? Would you like put all the books in on the first day and then you'd never do that again? Start to imagine yourself actually doing the thing. That's a powerful thing. It's a motivator. Lives change because of we have the ability to sit and imagine our lives differently. So I can sit here and I can imagine myself doing these things that are being said in church. It's useful to me. And I want to do it different. It's an imagined experience. And it's good. It's part of this. We are called to love those around us. Who will I be around, and how can I love them more? It's imagined. I imagined what it would be like Thursday night to have my marriage be valued no matter where I go in the world, or in this world, the world of America. So in these states, what would that be like? What would it be like to be able to not think, if I desire to move somewhere or travel somewhere, is there a risk that Nancy and I would need to put in some legal protections to make sure that we're protected and that we're valued as a couple? I imagine what that would be like. But Friday I had lived experience. Lived experience is where we change. Lived experience that could not come unless we first imagined it. Lived experience is where the very fiber of our being can expand. And we can begin to see people in a new way. And we can begin to see ourselves in a new way in relation to them. Lived experience. Those around us are who we are called to love, is about lived experience. Now we're talking names, dates, and times. It's not imagined. Wherever I end up, people around me, that's who, those are my peeps. I'll love them. It's now, and it's hard, because those are real experiences. Those are, but they did that thing to me, or they think this thing about me, or she did not put the laundry away. Like, there's a lot of different things that get in the way in lived experience. But that's where we get to change. I got to go down Friday night. I invited anyone on Facebook, so if you're on Facebook, you got an invitation for me, to come on down and check out everyone gathering after all 50 states had access to marriage equality. And I imagined what that would be like. So we'll go down, it'll be a good time, it'll be really neat to see everyone. The moment, the lived experience, though, of standing down there with members of my family. And I have a man in my life, his name is Vern Baker. He's been in my life since I was very young, and he's a father figure in my life. And he is related to us as well. And he was standing next to me, and this is a man who is a straight man, who has just one of the biggest hearts ever, and was weeping with joy that this was finally happening. And there was this moment where the choir was singing God Bless America. And most of the choir is likely LGBT because it's an LGBT choir. And they were singing these words, God Bless America. And there was such emotion and passion in it, because you know what? It meant that they were loved in America. They felt seen in America. And that song was different to me for the first time. It was a lived experience in a way I've never seen before. And then I had the lived experience of this man, this family member who loves us so much, weeping because he loves us so much, and saying, America has a long way to go before they deserve these guys. And he was feeling the pain of all of this time in which individuals were in couples for 50, 60 years, and their partner died and they never saw this day. And he was feeling the joy of his family members feeling safe. It was a lived experience that I would have never imagined until I actually had it. And the lived experience is the work of grace. When we think about grace, grace is something given. It's not something that we work for. And that is accurate. It's not something we earn. But there is a readiness and a preparation to receive. I'm going to read to you real quick here. Anne Lamott says that we are on this earth without a manual because this is forgiveness school. So let's play with that for a second. What if that was true? What if our purpose in being here was learning how to forgive? Well, we're not really doing it yet, right? I know I don't do that too much. I keep a tally, and I keep it going because it keeps me knowing who's saved, knowing who's not saved, knowing where I stand, all of those things. But what it does is it harbors resentment within me. I develop this resentment that separates me from others, and I don't get to be in relationship with others as a result. A great saying around resentment that you probably have heard is, resentment is like drinking poison and expecting it to kill the other person. And that is very true for my life. I'm in recovery, so that's a part of my life. It's a part of my value system where I literally was drinking poison, expecting it to kill other people. And it was this tally that I was keeping. It was this list of wrongs. And I did not realize what it was actually doing was preventing me from being loved and preventing me from loving. There's an internal process that happens in relationship where I have greater access to have and experience love. I have greater access to have and experience grace based on what I'm willing to do internally with others. There's a direct correlation between the amount of love I get to experience in my life and the amount of love I'm able to give. It's correlated. It's together. And because of that, it changes the ways in which we get to experience grace. Grace is around, period. It doesn't increase for some and decrease for others. It's there. Our awareness, though, changes. Our awareness that grace is available to us and that we get to experience that changes based on what we're doing, how we're responding to the world around us, how we're responding with love, with anger, resentment, with bitterness, all of those things. It cuts it off. So my experience of grace changes. I get to experience grace some days that you don't, and you do some days that I don't. And it's largely based on decisions we make. It's largely based on what we're willing to do and what we're telling ourselves about that thing that just happened. I could have stood down there, and there were people who did, while they sang God Bless America and thought that we have a long way to go. We're not there yet. I hope all of you aren't thinking that we're done with this work. All of that absolutely, and that's valid. But you miss the grace. If you're not alive to the moment, if you're not aware and open and saying, what is this? What is next? We miss the experience of grace and love. Richard Rohr is one of my favorite authors to read. And he has a wonderful book. And it is called Breathing Underwater. And it's largely about recovery, actually, and the Christian path in recovery. He says this in that book. Grace will always favor the prepared mind. Grace will always favor the prepared mind. If we are preparing ourselves to receive grace, and we are living into the ways in which we can experience grace, we get to experience grace. It's not that you're more blessed. It's not that you're more loved. It's not that you did it better than someone else. You just were ready. And if we live our lives in a way where we're constantly becoming ready and open to that experience of love and grace, we are different in the world. The world changes because we changed. And that's a powerful thing that each of us gets to do. So I do want to tell you a quick story about being in South Africa. So in South Africa, I was, as I said, a school teacher. I lived there. I lived with the Xhosa tribe. And I taught seventh grade. I learned geometry the night before I was going to teach it because I failed geometry in high school. You learn differently when you have to teach, by the way, so it's a good tool. So I was told by the power-ups that obedience was mandatory. So like that it was a cultural norm for kids to be obedient to adults. And so it would be odd if a child was not being obedient to you, which really meant was not giving room for children to be children. And it was a misconception on their part about culture. But my 18-year-old self heard that and was trying to enforce rules accordingly. And Nkona Mvandaba, invited me to be challenged. He said, hey, no, we're not going to do it. Like, you think we're going to do it? This is going to be difficult for you. And what that looked like was a lot of headbutting and just not relating to one another well and a lot of problems. And I remember this day, I don't know what brought it to its head, but he did something and that was the last straw and we're going to go see the principal now. So I said, Nkona, come with me, and we're start marching and we're both angry and it's radiating off of us. And anyone who saw us would know we're mad. We're mad people. We're angry and justified in our anger. I don't think we said two words to each other as we were going up, and I remember his angry face really well, and I remember, like, why are you angry? Kind of a feeling. I should be the one that's mad. So as we're walking up the path, one of the mothers in the tribe that actually lived in the school in the hostels with the kids, Esther was her name, she stopped us. She blocked us. She blocked our path, and she said, where are you going? What's going on? So the anger radiated off of us. And I said, oh, you would not believe what Akone did, and I listed all of his faults. And she grabbed my hand, and she grabbed Akone's hand, and she started to say, peace, peace. So after I finished my angry words about Akone let her know why I was awful. And she began to sway. Peace, peace. And then I said a few more words, and then Akone said a few more words, and all she did is sway and peace. And peace. And when someone who understands peace speaks peace into you and holds your hands, something changes. And gradually, I felt the anger kind of just let go, and we swayed with her, and I started crying, and Akone started crying because this year has really not been awesome. It's been hard. And peace sounds really nice. She blocked our path to anger and gave us peace. And when we received that, our relationship changed. And our relationship did change that day. Where we were at odds, we were on the same side. I loved him, he loved me, and we made sure that we told each other that often. The next day, he brought us a gift of mealies, which we boiled for 2.5-3 hours, and then realize, oh, these are actually things that are fed to cows, and it's not supposed to be cooked and eaten. But we did anyway because he gave them to us. And it meant a lot. And it changed us. And none of it mattered anymore. I don't even know what he did. I have no recollection of anything that made me angry. But man, I love him. And he loves me, and we changed as a result. We are called to love. We are called to love those around us, but those around us now are who we're called to love. That's the lived experience. I'll finish with just another thought from Richard Rohr. Again, grace will always favor the prepared mind. But then he continues, maybe we can sum it up this way. God is humble and never comes if not first invited, but God will find some clever way to get invited. And the invitation, sitting right next to you.